Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody, and Merry Christmas. I cannot believe we are already to Christmas week, but we are, and it is December 20th. Again, we mentioned that time because you can go in and download this program at any time and listen to it again and again and again, and we are excited to have you with us again this week and excited to be hearing from our guest today, Dr. David Burson, who is PMI's Chief Economist and Strategist. And man, we're going to need some strategies going into the new year. We're so excited to have Dr. Burson on the program. We welcome so many of our regular listeners that are tuning in each and every week, either live or downloading the program during the week and listening to it. We appreciate you. Also, we thank you. We thank the folks there at Housing Media, America Housing Media, for hosting the Lickin' on Lending program on their website. And you can go there and download all the information related to that. Also, you get there by going to www.lickinonlending.com, and you can register for the weekly emails announcing upcoming guests and programs. We're excited about being able to come to you each and every week, and we've got a great lineup of guests coming up in the weeks ahead. But this week, we are going to go and get, as we do each and every week, get into interest rates, and we're going to talk about it. So let's go to Joe Farr. Joe, are you out there? Joe? Oh, that's right. Joe is on the ski slopes, folks. He is out in California, out in Heavenly Valley area, up there in Northern California, enjoying the slopes. I was actually just doing that to have some fun, so in case Joe's listening in, give him a little nervous breakdown. And but we're going to be covering interest rates, what's going on, and I'm thrilled to be able to do it for you. I'll be providing to you, so consider the source. Actually, the source is MBS Quote Line. I'm dialed in and looking at that right now. It's very interesting. We'll get some more commentary from Dr. Burson on a lot of what's going on economically as well. Today, what's going on is I see that MBS prices are holding steady after the close, but seem to be falling a bit right on the price side right now. So it's interesting. We'll get some more feedback on that as to what's going on. Favorable repricing may be experienced is one of the earlier posts that you might have gotten if you use MBS Quote Line. Last week, we watched volatility continue as it was a challenge. Midday pricing changes almost every single day. And then Tuesday, everything was bad for MBS prices. Prices dropped to over a point, and there was a lot of factors that go into it. Again, Dr. Burson will be helping us digest a lot of that. But retail sales increased much better than expected. The PPI was higher than expected. Again, something we hope to get some insights into why all of this is going on in light of some of the things going on economically. The tax compromise announced last week moved closer to passage. And, of course, Joe gave you some of these notes before some of the things took place towards the end of the week. The Fed meeting announcements reflected little change in the Fed's thinking, and so that was not a big factor in last week's volatility. Wednesday, however, negative momentum continued, and we watched the prices fall by 3/4 of a point, and despite tame inflation. So can't wait. I'm obviously not going into this because we got Dr. Burson on the phone, and he'll be joining with us on the call. He's going to explain a lot of why is this going on, why are the markets behaving as they are. There's days where the equities and the bonds move in tandem, and there's days where they do their normal thing where they go in opposite directions, counter cyclical to each other. So it'll be very interesting. Prices had I think what one of the factors was prices had just fallen too far, and so we saw a lot of correction. This next week, coming up this week, rather, we will see a little in the way of significant economic news, if I'm looking at the calendar correctly, and that there will be existing and new home sales data released Wednesday and Thursday, respectively, and durable orders, durable good orders, will be coming out on Thursday as well. For those of you that are follow me, I will be on Fox, and it's interesting that we'll be getting existing home sales data will be coming out. I will be doing a Fox broadcast on Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune into Fox Business, and you'll get my comments as to what's going on. I'll be a part of a panel. Always an interesting discussion to hear where things are at. I seem to be the guy out here on Main Street, and I always find I have a fair number of critics when they go to a panel discussion on the topic of housing and where things are going. So tune in if you want to listen to me live on the Fox broadcast this coming Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Well, I don't know if Joe's listening. He's probably cringing over the job I did, the way I handled the market update of what's going on. But we appreciate Joe being a part of our broadcast and doing what he is. We wish Joe and his family, as well as all of you, a very Merry Christmas. But we'll get into that later. Joe, can't wait to have you back next week. Folks, that's the update on interest rates today. And we'll get more perspective from Dr. Burson. But we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. You're going to want to stay tuned for the whole broadcast because we've got Dr. David Burson, PMI's Chief Economist and Strategist, with us a little bit later on in the program. But there's so much going on that has gone on this year. Alice Alvey has been like no other. As far as when it comes to regulation, nothing has quite been equal to 2010. I can't wait. And an upcoming broadcast next week, we're going to be talking about what to look forward to. As next week, we're going to be hopefully doing that and talking about what is going to be coming up for 2011. But let's talk about the here and now. What do we got, Alice Alvey? And
well,
by the way, Alice,
I want to say a special
thank you to all of your staff, Alice, again. And wish your whole staff there at Mortgage U a very Merry Christmas and a big thank you out to all of them for their work that they do to bring this report forward to us each every week. Sorry for cutting you off. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Thank you very much for that. Same to all of you and all our listeners. Have a happy holiday. Hopefully you have lots of loans closing still, though. Right?
Yeah,
it seems
exactly.
to be people's thoughts of shops still are very, very busy trying to meet year-end deadlines. But in terms of the legislation, you know, thank goodness Congress has some other things to pay attention to, and we are getting a whole new group of people in at the beginning of the year, so things will have to we'll reset and see what our traction is in 2011 for different parts of the legislative world. But what I want to help you with right now is a couple of things that happened last week. First of all, FHA has given a partial extension, is what I'm calling it, to the expiration of the loan correspondent status issues. So two things. Loan correspondent is going away still December 31st, and those of you who have just a loan correspondent approval, you will see dramatic changes in your access to FHA connection. But FHA did say you may, if you have your own warehouse lines to be able to close loans in your own name, and you get a case number on a loan, and you get it approved by a DE underwriter before December 31st, you can still close that loan in your own name after the first of the year. So the deadline has been shifted a little bit in terms of its meaning. It's not you're just cut off and all your loans had to have closed by December 31st. Now, it doesn't mean you can stockpile case numbers. For those of you who only heard the case number part, it really is you have the loan and it's made its way through DE underwriting with the DE approval by December 31st, then you can go ahead and close it in your own name. The other part that FHA is, we're supposed to be getting something in writing from them. This information I'm giving to you came from the MBA's bimonthly conference call that was held last week. The second piece is principal-agent relationships. Right now, the way the rule is worded is if you have, if in order for you to take advantage of principal-agent relationships as two mortgagee companies, you would both have to have unconditional direct endorsement underwriting approval. What FHA change is just a slight piece to that, that they're going to give us a six-month window all the way till July 1st of 2011, that if you've at least got mortgagee status, but perhaps you haven't finished your test cases yet, you'll be able to retain an agent who has full DE approval to be able to assist you in the underwriting process until you finish your test cases. It's just a window of opportunity. They're not changing the rule altogether. So those of you who are going to that next step to get your mortgagee status, you have to go all the way and get through your test cases. You just get a little bit of a longer window to accomplish that. So that was a real good news piece, I think.
That is definitely some good news.
Yeah, it's nice to get a little bit. But for a lot of companies, you'll see a switch flip, you know, January 1st. If you were a correspondent level approval, you'll find you have a lot of restrictions in FHA connection. Okay, the next thing is loan officer compensation. We have tried to just keep you a little bit up to date again. Again, I'm still going to remind you that Dave has a great blog going on this subject within LinkedIn. So be sure to become part of that loan officer compensation rule discussion. But what I want to call to your attention is last Wednesday, Thursday, the Mortgage Bankers Association issued what I consider to be the most compelling discussion for postponement of the loan officer compensation rule. Other people are claiming to have all different things that they want to fight. You know, let people go through the battles. I'm still convinced the Fed is going to have this move forward. But MBA has some great points in a 19-page write-up that they put together that really could be the best ground for possibly getting an extension. We'll see. Maybe the Fed reacts to this quickly and, you know, we get some answers to our questions. We might not like the answers, but I want everybody to be aware of this document. Go check it out. It has some good things, even from a policy decision. If you're thinking of, I'm trying to establish my loan officer comp plan because I think this is moving forward, this is a done deal, read the MBA's discussion so you know what are the areas as an industry that are really firmly unclear from certain legal aspects. So just a heads up on that one. And last but not least, Dave, I want to give everybody again our year-end reminder list of disclosures. We do have that the risk-based pricing disclosure is going to be due for all applications starting January 1st. So make sure you have a policy set for when is that disclosure going to be triggered. Are you just going to give it out on every single loan? From a sales standpoint, I'm not so sure that's helpful, but possible. So check with your credit bureaus. Many of them have published example disclosures on how your new notice to home loan applicant is going to look. And then we have a mortgage transfer of servicing disclosure that's also effective in January, and appraisal independence rules start to become optional at the end of this year, and then there is also new till and arm disclosures that are going to be out by the end of January. So heads up, everybody. We have a lot more to pay attention to in 2011. And that's it for my report this time.
Well, it's good. Alice, thank you so much. One thing I know a lot of folks are going to want to go read that 19-page compelling. Is it 19 points or 19 pages? Okay. So that will kind of help you. Well, you know what? It's stirring up a lot of people's hearts in this thing, so it will kind of probably cause you to wake up. It gives you the ability, if you're calling your senators, to be able to talk about it. So, Alice, where can they find that? Is that on the MBA's website?
Yeah, I would say that's the best place to go. And, you know, I didn't mention it. I think that, you know, there's some real good arguments in there about how much time does it take? Is it taking extra time on FHAs and purchases? And can I pay somebody more for the time worked versus the one part of the regulation says yes, one part says no? So.
Yeah, it's certainly not clear, and there's a can't wait to read that 19-page document over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe we'll be able to devote a show to digest it a little bit more as we learn more.
Well, we definitely going to be talking about a lot of this next 2 weeks on our broadcast as we look at a year in review and looking forward into the new year. So, yeah, absolutely. Let's see if we can't all get it downloaded, digested. Tune in, folks, next week, and we'll have more for you on all of that. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Dr. Burson after we get right back after this word. Thank you.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. Sorry for me hacking away there. I thought I muted my mic, and I realized my mic was on as I was coughing. So I apologize for that, coughing over that ad. But we welcome you back, and we are so thrilled, as you're going to be hearing from in the next segment, Dr. Burson, who's the chief economist and senior vice president and strategist for PMI. It's going to be a great segment, but you know what? It's all about making money, and we've got the profit doctor who's here to fix it, what's ailing your bottom line. Andy, what metaphors, what analogies are you going to bring forward this week? It's kind of like if there's any way anyone could bring something that seems so abstract and far removed from accounting, you do it. So what do you got for us this week?
Well, thanks, Dave. Well, we're going to look backwards and forwards at the same time today. So
that'll give you
fun.
A neck injury.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, we want to reflect on the past and anticipate the future both at the same time. And here's the challenge with some of this. What we think about how things should be may not be the way things really are. So what we think about how things should be may not be the way things really are.
I can accept that from Dr. Burson, but I'm not sure. How does that relate to accounting?
Well, you know, I like to eat chocolate at every meal, but that would be bad. There's an interesting book out. It's been out for a while. Robert Bork, the former law professor and former acting U.S. Attorney General and at one point a Supreme Court nominee, wrote a book called Slouching Toward Gomorrah. And in that book he talks about the reality of how things are may not be how we wish they were. And so, like, here's an example. I wish my daughters liked football, so we didn't have disagreements about what to watch on TV on Christmas. But what I want and what things really are may not necessarily be the same. We also may want to have, you know, peace on earth and goodwill toward men, but the reality of the world is not always like that. I know your daughter's going to Rwanda. I mean, there's just, it's not always like we would like it to be. Now, here's how it ties back to business. We wish we could just hope for more volume, hope for more profit, and that it would just appear. But we all know that's not the case. So, you know, when it comes time now for year-end planning, most people would rather to do just about anything else. There's Christmas cookies around. There's all kinds of activities. There's a lot of distractions. But we need to do our year-end planning. And the reality is, if we don't focus our attention on forecasting and budgeting, then we're not planning. And not planning is planning for disaster. So, you know, I like the mentality of let's just shoot from the hip and just wing it because it's fun, it's free, it's entrepreneurial, it's real loose, you just kind of get what you get. But the problem is no big successful company operates like that. Big successful companies have plans and they have forecasts and they look at the way things should be. And so we need to do the same thing with our business. In the same way, we need to not just guess about what kind of volume we think we're going to have or how much we're going to make. We need to anticipate the future so that based on different volume levels, we can get an idea about how much money we're going to make. You know, there's no need to just guess. Economists,
right,
like Dr. Burson coming on, make a living making educated guesses, predictions about the future. And we, too, can predict about our business. So here's what we need. We need forecasting tools. We need forecasting tools, and these have been around forever. We used to do them manually on spreadsheets. Now we've got Excel. We need to use spreadsheets to predict what's going to happen to our business based on different volume levels. So what we need to do is we're going to predict volume, and we're going to calculate revenue based on that volume and based on our anticipated secondary marketing gain on sale. So we take how much money we think we're going to make based on different levels, and we put that into an Excel file. And then we're going to look at our expenses driven by staff levels, You know, the number of files per underwriter has changed. Number of files per processor has changed a bit, so we need to look at that. Number of files per shipper, number of people in secondary marketing managing locks. We need to have standards for every one of those positions. So as volume goes up, we need more people. As volume goes down, we have excess capacity. And then this gives us, along with all of our operating expenses, our net income, and we then measure that based on basis points in volume. It's really not that hard to do, and it's an essential tool because you have to have that to know what your cash flow balances are going to be. Your banks are doing this. All successful businesses do this kind of year-end planning for tax purposes and budgeting, and your budget then your forecast then becomes your budget. So I'll get to my wrap up here because I know this is incredibly boring, but the forecast. Pardon me.
You're never boring, Andy.
You know.
Well, it sometimes feels like people's eyes are rolling back in their back of their head when I start talking about cash balances and warehouse balances. But this forecast, you know, it's I can't impress enough on how important it is. Of the shows that we've had recently, this is really, really important. This is the thing.
Yes.
Companies go out of business if they don't do this correctly because they'll grow too fast, they'll run out of cash, they'll miss the payroll and get shut down. We've got clients that are dealing with this issue right now. You've got to know the cash effect of your increased volume. And so
yep.
As volume increases, your cash actually decreases, and we can get into why at some point. So we actually have a very comprehensive tool we use for calculating future earnings. And you can build one yourself. If you don't know how to build one, get someone to help you build one. But get one of these. You've got to have a financial forecast. And it's very, very important to forecast your future, or like I said, you could run out of cash. So
yep.
Your forecasting becomes your budget, and you look at this every month, and you measure your results, because if you shoot at nothing, you'll hit it every time.
Great comment. Shoot at nothing, you'll hit it every time. That's excellent.
So that's the Profit Doctor for this week. Dave, thanks.
Thank you so much, Andy. That is very good. And, folks, we are going to be having a campus in conjunction with Campus MBA, a seminar that's going to be starting in January, on January 11th. Dial into the MBA's website. Campus MBA has been very gracious to create a 4 or 5 week seminar, and we are going to be doing this online. You can register for it. We're going to be covering all of this in great, great detail. You're not going to want to miss that webinar. I don't care if you're a CEO, a CFO, CPA, or in any way even thinking about running your own business. You do not want to miss that webinar. Thank you, Prophet Doctor, for bringing this all the time, and I can't wait for the Dr. Burson report that's coming up here in just a minute. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. It's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and we are very fortunate to have Dr. Burson with us. Dr. Burson is, and it's David Burson, but anytime anyone has gone to the effort to get a PhD and have the credentials that he has, I believe he does deserve the respect to be called doctor. I admire the fact that anyone who has spent the time being a student of the economy, as Dr. Burson has been, I just want to celebrate that. So people say, Dave, you're not that kind of formal guy. Let me tell you, I really respect Dr. Burson and what he brings to our program and, quite frankly, to many of you listeners. We're very fortunate to have him here this week, and a special thank to Ralph Arment and all the folks there at PMI for being such a big part of this broadcast and getting it published all around the country. Dr. Burson is, again, the chief economist and strategist for PMI, has been there since October of 2007. Prior to joining PMI, Dr. Burson also was vice president and chief economist for Fannie Mae, that little-known secondary market player that's out there in the market every once in a while. He was there. While there, he advised the company on national and regional economics. Folks, it's enough of a challenge just to stay up what's going on nationally. In addition to that, he tracked what was going on in the regional economics. He also tracked what was going on in housing, mortgage policy, and conditions, including forecasts and analysis of the economy relating interest rate direction. Boy, we're going to talk about that some today. Housing and mortgage financing markets all related to what is very near and dear to our hearts. Prior to Fannie Mae, he held a senior management positions at Wharton Econometric Forecasting Associates. Can't wait to get into that. That sounds like I would be able to say hello, and that's probably wouldn't understand a lot they had to say after that. His government experience is included staff economists, and I find this very interesting, staff economists on the Council of Economic Advisors and Economic Analysts at the Treasury Department and the official and the Office of Special Trade Representative. So Dr. Burson is also the president of the National Association for Business Economics and a featured speaker to the media. I see him featured on a number of television programs. I've always enjoyed his comment. And he speaks at economic, on the economy at many, many industry events. I could go on and on. He received his doctorate degree in economics and a master's degree in public policy from the University of Michigan, up there where you're at, Alice, and also a bachelor degree in history and economics from Williams College. Wow, there's a lot. But you have a PhD. We want to get through all of his background. Dr. Burson, so good to have you here with us on the program today.
David, I'm happy to be here.
We're going to talk a lot about the economy, where we're at. I want to start off with this one question that just so many people are wondering. Are we out of the Great Depression? Or are we not? Where do we stand related to this quote-unquote Great Depression that's out there?
Well, according to the folks at the Commerce Department, the Great Recession ended in June of 2009. So we've actually been out of recession, out of the Great Recession, for almost a year and a half. And actually, we probably have been. You know, there are a lot of government statistics that people say, well, I just can't believe that. Or, you know, it's either too bad or too good to be true. But we probably have been out of recession for more than a year.
You know, I'd love to get into analyzing that. Because, you know, you also taught for a period of time at where you got your doctorate degree at the University of Michigan. So we could get into so much of what drives that. And I encourage people to go out and read what you've written. But let's talk, even if we are out of the Great Recession, if it really is over, what are the odds that we could fall into another downturn in 2011? And what would be causing that if that were to happen?
Well, there were a lot of concerns about that, particularly early on after the recession ended, in large part because a lot of people didn't think the recession actually was over.
Yeah,
but
right.
the economic news that we've been getting over the last several months, much better. And if you look, forecaster after forecaster has been marking up their projections for economic growth in 2011. So I think the odds of something bad happening in 2011 have gone down. And certainly the bipartisan nature of the extending the Bush tax cuts, I think,
yeah,
helps growth in 2011. I think if that had not occurred, you know, it still might have occurred with the new Congress, but if it didn't occur, then I think the odds of something really bad happening, going back into a downturn in 2011, would have been pretty high. But now I think the odds, you know, probably less than about 15%. So 85% chance that we're going to continue to grow in 2011.
Well, you know, we got a whole bunch of folks that emailed me questions that I'm not going to be able to get through all of them, and I don't want to take us too far off of that. But if that is the case, how do you explain gold prices going to where they're at? I think that we had about 10 emails in on that. How do you explain gold prices continue just appear to be going up and up, and with rumors of them going ridiculously further? Is it just fear?
You know, if we could really forecast gold prices, we'd all make a lot of money. I think there were a couple of reasons why gold prices have gone up so much. First, it was fear. Fear in 2008, 2009, that in fact the Great Recession was going to be the second coming of the Great Depression. And there were a lot of people who bought gold as a store of value. But in 2009 and in 2010, while there's still some people who bought for that reason, there has been a big worldwide demand for gold because worldwide the economy is growing. Worldwide, there are some increasing concerns about inflation, although they may be overblown in the U.S. And the use of gold as a metal in industry goes up as well. So I think that most of the increase in gold prices is coming from an increase in its worldwide demand, not because of fears of a second downturn in the U.S.
Well, a lot of people say I could give a flip about where gold prices are. I just want to get back to work. When are we going to start seeing real job growth and a decline in the unemployment? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. You know, we've seen job growth for all of 2010, but just like in the recovery from the 2001 recession, and just like the recovery from the 1991 recession, this is a third consecutive jobless recovery. It's not literally jobless. We're seeing job growth, but it's not strong, and it hasn't been strong enough to bring the unemployment rate down, at least not yet. So for all of this year, we've seen job growth every month, at least in the private sector. You know, we had the census workers coming on the first half of the year and then coming off. If you take them out, we've seen job growth every month. And actually, the job growth we're seeing is occurring sooner than in the last couple of recessions. But it's not strong yet. But I guess the good news is it looks to be increasingly strong. And with the good economic numbers that we're getting in 2011, we should finally start to see some more decent job gains and at least in the second half of 2011, start to see the unemployment rate at least inch down.
That would be most encouraging. I think what there's been so much focus on, if you listen to some of the talk radio shows and some of the you know commentary going on a lot of the business channels, of which some of which you've appeared on certainly more than I have, but I've been on, is the government sector. It seems like job growth has been just so much stronger in the government sector. Again, how do you see the balance? Do you see that starting to flatten out and really see the growth in the private sector?
Well, we saw much stronger growth in government, particularly the federal government level, less so at state and local level, in 2008 and 2009. But that's already turned around. In 2010, there's been very little growth, if any, in government employment. All the growth, and if you look at government, both you know, adding up federal, state, and local, more than all the growth we've had this year is private growth. Federal government employment not doing much, but state and local down because of the fiscal problems of state and local governments. But that's been more than made up by private sector growth. So we're starting to see the labor market turning in the direction we'd like. You know, government employment isn't necessarily bad, but it's almost always the case that private sector employment is better. And so the strength we're starting to see in private sector employment, I think, is a very positive indicator for coming strength in this expansion.
That is encouraging to hear, and I want to believe those words more than you are. You can believe. Bunch of questions that came were related to some of the regional economies that are out there, some of the state economies, and I don't want to spend a lot of time getting too far off on that. But California, where you live and where PMI is located, is really gone through some really interesting economic times. Any idea of what we can experience in California and New York and some of the more precarious states? Any thoughts and reflection? We have a lot of people wrote about that. We're familiar with your background and wrote us regarding the fact that what you were fanning me, you did track both national and regional economic metrics. So any comments about California, New York, and some of the other?
Sure. You know, when you talk about economics, you talk about the housing market. There is no national economy. There is no national housing market.
That's right.
You know, they're all state, and certainly with housing, there's not even a single housing market in any state. They're all broken up into local markets. And so, you know, we do look very closely at state and regional economies, state and regional housing markets. And, you know, we're continuing to see, even though things are slowly getting better everywhere, clearly the greater strength in local economies, and particularly in the job market, it continues to be in the middle of the country, the Midwest,
yep,
down through Texas. Some decent job growth in those areas, and the economies are expanding there. We're still seeing weakness on the West Coast, even in California, there continues to be weakness in the job market. Although, you know, if you look at jobs and housing, things are much better in coastal California than they are, say,
yeah,
in the Central Valley, and better in Northern California than in Southern California. The East Coast, things are okay in the D.C. area because government's a growth industry again, at least modestly. So things are going all right there. And, you know, in New York, obviously the problems with financial services industry has greatly affected what's going on in New York City, but that's probably bottomed out. And I think that, you know, going forward, we're going to see the New York economy recovering, maybe not quickly at first, but building through 2011.
I think it's encouraging I want to believe that we're seeing California. I lived in California, Orange County specifically, when they filed bankruptcy and went through that great restructure. It was astounding to me how fast that economy and how resilient that economy was and how quickly they came back. We also had on some time ago, back on October 18th, we had Margaret Kelly, who's president and CEO of RE/MAX, a real good segment for many of you listeners that did not get a chance to listen. I'd encourage you to head out to American Housing Media and tune in to that broadcast. Download. It was a very interesting. I think Margaret Kelly would be thrilled to hear some of your comments about this. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break with Dr. Burson, who is Chief Economist and Strategist for PMI. We'll be right back after this brief word.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar DataTrack.
There's an interesting article by Nick Kimareos at the Wall Street Journal site that talks about the potential hit to the lending and real estate world with rates climbing up over 5%. Quoting folks like Goldman Sachs economist Ed McKilvery and the like, the thought is that the refi market will be impacted, but it really shouldn't make an impact on the purchase market. You can read the details in this article called "Will Mortgage Rate Rise Hurt Housing Market?" at wallstreetjournal.com. Also, I tripped across a really interesting tool that combines census information with Google Maps and displays it all in an interactive website. No story here, but I recommend that you check out projects.nytimes.com/census/2010/explorer. I'll repeat that in a minute. You can put in the zip code you want to view and select the demographic map type, and voila, you'll gain a new perspective on your market. The first thing that popped into my head when I saw this was that, as a lender, I would use this to target demographics that I specialize in. That site again is projects.nytimes.com/census/2010/explorer. And although it's from the New York Times, it does cover the entire country. Well, those were the sites that caught my attention this past week for the Mortgage Minute. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar DataTrack. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lincoln on Lending Show or online at dmdinc.com. PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin on Lending, and we are so fortunate to have Dr. David Burson, PMI Chief Economist and Strategist, with us. Also, he is the former Vice President and Chief Economist for Fannie Mae, a wealth of knowledge, wealth of experience, and has been tracking these markets for many, many years, specifically the housing market. Alice, I want to toss the mic over to you. I know you have some questions for Dr. Burson.
Yes, I do, and welcome to the program, Dr. Burson.
Thanks, Alice.
I have some questions. You know, we had the two home buyer tax credits. You know, right now we're sitting on, I think the estimates are around 3.5 existing new and existing homes that are out on the market, and prices are dropping, according, I believe, to the last statistics. How can we get a pickup back in our housing activity, and how strong is that likely to be? Do you forecast, in your forecast, where do you see housing sales going?
Well, you know, the two home buyer tax credits unfortunately didn't do what policymakers hoped they would do. I mean, they did in part. They brought sales forward. People did respond to those and bought homes when the credits were in place and then stopped buying afterwards. And it was hoped that the economy would pick up enough so that when the tax credits ended, you wouldn't get too much of a downdraft from the credits. But the economy simply wasn't very strong when those ended. And so, you know, all that happened was we got a change in the timing of when homes were sold. And so part of the weakness that we've seen in housing over the last several months is because of the end of the second home buyer tax credit. It looks as if sales have probably bottomed out, but they're sure not picking up very much. Although, you know, there's been some good news lately. The weekly mortgage bankers survey and mortgage applications, the purchase applications, have been moving up now for a couple of months, and that suggests that when the reported home sales come out, November, but particularly December and January, we'll see some increases in the home sales numbers. But more fundamentally, it's going to take a pickup in the job market to get people to buy homes. You know, we'll talk about mortgage rates, I'm sure, later. But what happens to the job market, I think, is much more important. People will buy homes, even if mortgage rates are higher, if they feel confident about their job and income earning prospects. And as the job market improves, those prospects will get better and people will feel better about it. So, you know, we think 2010 is the bottom of the housing market. 2011, we should see some modest increases in home sales, and then probably some pretty strong increases by the time we get into 2012.
Well, Dr. Burson, this is Andy Schell. Thanks for being on the show. I had a question for you about the hidden inventory. We hear a lot about that there's a lot of homes for sale, and there's a lot more homes that will be for sale that are currently delinquent or soon in foreclosure. Do you see this hidden inventory affecting home prices?
Well, it will affect home prices, and it has affected home prices. You know, obviously, there are a lot of homes for sale right now, but there are a lot of homes that aren't for sale that are seriously delinquent or that have been foreclosed on or somewhere in the foreclosure process. And while not all the delinquencies will end up in foreclosure, and hopefully many of them won't with mitigation efforts, but some of them will. And that will, you know, be a negative for home prices. Anytime you have an increase in the supply of homes for sale, it's a negative for home prices. And that's particularly the case when you have distressed properties, because they add additionally to downward home prices. I guess the good news is, if there is any here, and I think there is some, number one, the pickup in job growth will help to offset that. And two, the servicers that have these homes are very unlikely to dump all these homes on the market at once. You know, the main reason for that being that if they did, it would push home values down a lot, and they already have a lot of homes for sale on the market, and they don't want to get a lower price in those homes they already have for sale. So that suggests that we'll see this hidden inventory be put on the market relatively slowly, but over a long period of time. And so we don't really expect significant home price gains, home prices back to long-term averages of, say, 3-4%, probably for another couple of years.
But do you think that there will be additional declines, though?
Well, I think in the near term there will be, in part because we've had this pause in housing demand with the reaction from the end of the second home buyer tax credit, and we still get some additional homes put on the market all the time that are distressed. And then seasonally, you know, this is, of course, the weakest time of the year for home sales, and when you do see home price declines, they're typically in the winter months. All of those things together suggest that over the next several months, we'll probably see another 3-5% drop in home prices nationally.
Well, I think, you know, so I guess I would pick up on the little bit of good news maybe is that, you know, the bottomed out in 2010, hopefully, right, and be able to kind of see a trend. I'm coming from a state, as you know, in Michigan. I think we've had something like 7 years of declining jobs in our state. We've been around this curve for a long time. So, you know, with the job prospects the way they are we going to still continue to see rises in mortgage delinquencies and that defaults really haven't peaked, so this hidden inventory is really going to continue to grow?
Well, if you look at mortgage delinquencies at the various stages, it looks like the early stage mortgage delinquencies, the 30 and the 60-day delinquencies, have peaked. Those have started to roll over, and that's the feedstock for the serious delinquencies and the foreclosures. Now, it takes a while to get there, and I don't think we've seen the peak in foreclosures yet. I think the peak in foreclosures probably won't occur until perhaps the middle of 2011. But with the declines in the early stage foreclosures, that by necessity means that foreclosures will start to turn down at some point in 2011 and really start to move more significantly down in 2012. But again, the key for all of this, what happens with foreclosures, what happens with housing demand, what happens with home prices, is going to be the job market. And if we get a more significant pickup in job growth in 2011, it will help tremendously in all facets of the housing market.
Well, it's great to hear that the end is in there. The light at the end of the tunnel really is the end. It's not another train. So, but in that regard, our businesses are starting to slow down a little bit. We had a nice refi boom at the end of the past year, but what do you see rates doing in 2011? Are we going to continue to support housing and maybe even get some more refi activity?
Well, obviously, we've seen a big run-up in rates over the last couple of months, and most of that is in financial markets, things always move too far either up or down. And I think rates had moved lower than the fundamentals could support over the summer. Now, that was great for people who wanted to refinance. I refinanced myself, so it was a great opportunity for people. But rates weren't going to stay there. They were simply too low, even given just modest economic growth, rates were too low. But now that it looks like economic growth is picking up, and as I mentioned earlier, almost everybody has been marking up their forecast for economic growth for 2011, we're seeing rates move up. Some mortgage rates have moved up a lot, but it may well be that, you know, rates have moved up too much, too quickly, and we may see rates move down some in the first half of 2011, not to where they were. I don't think rates, you know, mortgage rates are going to move down that much, but they may move down some. But the general direction in rates over the next couple of years, I think it's going to be upward. As the economy gets stronger, as fears of deflation go away completely, interest rates are going to go up. You know, in the long run, mortgage rates at, you know, 4% for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages probably are unsustainable, even with inflation relatively low. Instead, over the long run, we're probably going to see mortgage rates between 5 and 6%. But even that is a very low level of mortgage rates. Now, you know, certainly some people get priced out of the market. But more important than mortgage rates is the job market, as I've said a couple of times. And if you made me choose between a better job market and higher mortgage rates or a bad job market and lower mortgage rates, for the housing market, I'd always choose the former.
Absolutely. Without any question, we got to get job recovery. One of the questions that are being – I'm getting a lot of emails and comments coming to us. They all want to ask you questions. How much do the global markets impact our housing market? I mean, we look at China. You look at what a big buyer they have been of our debt. Any comments as to the global economics and how that's going to play into 2011, Dr. Burson?
Well, in general, the global economy is also strengthening, and that's going to be positive for the U.S. economy. We're going to be able to build and export more to foreign countries. And we're seeing much stronger growth in Asia and Latin America and South America than we are in Europe. Europe is going to lag in this recovery. And I think for at least the next couple of years. But overall, world economic growth is picking up, and there are two locomotives of growth in the world economy, the U.S. And China. And China's been strong and helped support world economic growth. The U.S. is joining it now, and that's going to pull up most of the rest of the world.
What about the condition, specifically Europe. There's a lot of focus on Europe. You're looking at Italy. Now, it's not necessarily economic, but you look at just the various economies. Spain that's going to be, is rumored to be in trouble. How do you see that? Should our focus be on the EU, or and what is or is not happening over there?
Well, we certainly have to look at it. You know, obviously, there are problems with budget deficits that are much bigger than the U.S. for a lot of the periphery countries for the EU. Greece, we all know about, and Ireland, but concerns about Spain and Portugal and Italy. You know, if one of them declared bankruptcy, you know, country yeah. declaring bankruptcy is not something you normally see, it would cause worldwide ripples, and it'd be more than ripples, it'd be maybe big waves, and so that's not likely to happen, but the concerns about it happening yeah. will probably keep inflows into the U.S. and financial markets fairly strong, and that's one of the things that will probably help to hold interest rates down. Even, you know, they're going to go up as the economy grows, but not as quickly because we'll continue to see these capital inflows into the U.S. But we need to keep looking at it just in case one of these countries does not successfully come up with a way to avoid bankruptcy.
And one of the questions kind of came in just now. Two questions as we get close to wrapping up the program. It's really interesting. It's really interesting the comments we get when we get an economist on our program. Dr. Burson, it's just fascinating. Quick question is, do we really need to be a concern? We're talking about foreign economy, and there's evidently some folks out there talking about a bankruptcy of California. Is would that have the same effect of a Spain or an Ireland or something, another country having an impact? What's your thoughts on that? There are a lot of concerns out there. I'm seeing a lot of questions come in on this.
Well, there are a lot of concerns, and the fiscal situation of a number of states is pretty bad, California among them, Illinois, others. You know, the odds of a state bankruptcy are low, but they're not zero. And the longer these fiscal imbalances continue, the greater the probability is. Again, it's still relatively low. You know, now if a state declared bankruptcy, particularly a big state, it would be a significant financial market disruption. But again, the odds are pretty low of that happening, in part because we all know what the negative impacts would be, and even if it's at the last minute, we probably won't allow it to occur.
I have one last question. We have 1 minute as we head out of this segment. But one question is, I think this is a fascinating one. I hadn't thought about it. Do you see the potential that the economic rules have changed? Everything that you have studied as an economist, do you see a change in the macro, what we should be looking at, so that we don't have an out-of-the-blue? I'm trying to look and summarize about four questions on this. I guess it is do the old economic rules still apply as we move forward in light of all that's going on globally?
You know, I think they do. You know, things change all the time, but always be suspicious when people say it's different this time. It may be yeah. slightly different, but it's usually never completely different. I think what people fail to recognize was that bubbles occur,
yep.
that they occur regularly, and we turn a blind eye to them. It's not that the economic rules failed. It's just that, you know, say, you know, with housing, where it was most clear, we all benefited so much from the bubble, except, of course, if you're a first-time buyer and wanted to buy, they didn't benefit
yeah.
at all. But everybody else benefited so much, you already owned a home, that we were willing to turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah, it's so important. But Dr. Burson, thank you so much for being with us this week. Again, we've had a special, by the way, a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, Dr. Burson.
Thank you, and to you and to all your listeners as well.
We would love to have you back. And again, is there a place on the PMI website where they can come and read your commentary, anything that we should focus our listeners to stay tuned into what you're publishing?
Well, if you go to the main PMI website, you'll see my things right on the front page, and you follow it, and you can see all the stuff that we get to.
That's very good. Thank you again so much for being with us this week. Folks, I want to just say a special thank you to Dr. Burson and all of our friends out there in PMI who have been such an important supporter of this radio program this last year. Thank you very, very much. Again, special shout-out goes to Ralph Armenta, probably one of the most persistent, one of the most make-it-happen kind of guys out there. And there are a whole lot of them like that in PMI. And you are so fortunate to have, if you have PMI and your team, you are so fortunate. You got wonderful team led by Dr. Burson there when it comes to studying what's going on, predicting where the markets are going, as well as just a tremendous practical help by all of those in the group out there. Thank you again so much. We look forward to getting into it. Alice and Andy, I'd love to get you on. We got kind of discussed a little bit some of the things that are coming up. But as to this next week's program, we're going to be talking about what we see coming down the line in 2011. It's kind of a light in between the holidays program, but it's going to contain a lot of really important stuff. Alice, I want to definitely look at that 19-page report that the NBA published to see if we can't, in fact, get some more insights, if we get more specific on that. Any comments for our listeners, Alice and Andy? And let's start with you, Alice, as we exit this program.
Well, I think, you know, everyone needs to really get their house in order operationally. I know Andy talks about it from a numbers standpoint, but you have to put the two together, the finances in conjunction with the process. And we have a lot of folks who are still trying to get caught up with the volume that they've had, trying to get underwriters trained, trying to get underwriters up to speed, and you just have to accept things are taking longer. Underwriters really are not out to deny everybody's loans. They're just trying to protect the company against repurchases, and we have to adjust our process flows to be able to accommodate that and not just blame them that they're trying to deny loans. So that, I guess that's my two cents at the moment here.
I don't know, Alice, if it's just me, but I'm hearing an increasing number of reports. Again, it seems like to be, I don't know if you characterize it as another wave, but there's certainly been a lot more phone calls coming into our consulting group asking about, I got another repurchase. What do I do with this? Well, who can I call for help on this? Are you seeing this as well out there?
Yes, we are having customers, and there's been a few rumblings that, you know, there's still more repurchases out there. So we just have to be diligent in the way that we're looking at loans, making sure the documentation is clear, and really the house is separate from the property. That my borrower is sound and my property is saleable and habitable and safe and sound all on its own, regardless of if my customer's got an 800 credit score or not. And that's, I think, part of the thing people are struggling with is, you know, each piece is its own characteristic now. It's not common sense on the overview of the loan anymore. Those days are gone.
I think it's so true. To that point, Prophet Dr. Andy Schell, you're not a PhD, but you sure you have one in my mind. But if you could give our listeners a little bit of a snapshot and glimpse into the upcoming webinar that's going to be coming up there, can you? I know you've got all these slides organized, and we're bringing together what I think is going to be an outstanding program, but kind of, why should people want to listen in on this webinar that we're going to be having with Campus MBA?
Well, I think one way to think about it, Dave, is it's like when you break a leg or your kid gets hurt and they take an X-ray and the doctor's sitting there looking at it, holding it up against the light, and they go, oh, you've got this and you've got that and you've got this. In business, we have an X-ray as well. It's called a financial report, and every business owner needs to know how to read it. Now, it looks complicated at first, but there really is a process. There's a method to the madness, and with a thorough understanding of what it means, you can really understand what your business did in the past, and then you couple that with a good financial model, you can know what your business is going to do in the future, so you can know where you're going, and you can avoid the ditch and avoid the cliff. Because there's a lot of cliffs and ditches out there. We want to be careful about avoiding those.
Okay, bring this back to the webinar. So I agree with you 100%. So are you covering all of that? Are you going to bring everyone up to speed in these five webinars that are coming up?
We're going to be installing ditch avoidance systems for every single listener.
Ditch avoidance systems. Ooh,
yeah, they're
going
to learn
how
to avoid the ditch and avoid the cliff. Stay on track. We're going to teach people how to read financials, how it works, why it works, loan-level detail, loan-level accounting, hedging reports, why it works, when it works, how it works, all that stuff. So at the end of this five session, they'll know all this stuff, and they can teach the session next time. And although it won't be quite the same because it'll be just the facts and not your commentary, which I'm looking forward to hearing very much.
Well, it's going to be good to do that. And you were just up, I think the roads, like they are up in Detroit where you were, and you got to get to have lunch with Alice and me. Snow on ice and roads can make them slippery. I think we got some slippery roads coming up. Folks, we've got just 1 minute as we wrap out. A special thank you to all our listeners that tune in. Also, a special thank you goes out to HousingMatrix.com. And we are just thrilled that they are here. They're a vast resource. for the housing and industry and mortgage professionals. We want to thank them so much for hosting the Lickin' on Lending program on their website. Also, you can go check out the latest news focusing on business, real estate, lending, and economics. Tips, tools, and tricks on the trade. You can go on. They got some great motivational speakers, some of which we've had on this program. Dirk Zeller's folks like Doug Smith has been on. Man, what a really powerful sessions these have been. Also, check out the campus. Also, check out the marketplace features with over 600 industry vendors as well as association portals. There's just so much stuff out there. And if you're one of the guys looking for a job, go to the Career Center. Check it out. It's a must-visit website. Thank you so much for being a part of the radio program. We appreciate you. Tell your friends about it. We'll be back next week. Have a great week, everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.